Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Uncensored. I'm Marianne, your host from Yachts Mermaids. And today we have, again, one of my favorite guests, Lynn Edwards. Welcome, Lynn. Thank you for being here today with us.
Thank you, Marianne. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
And for those who don't know Lynn, she's an insight trainer at Luxury Hospitality and the director of interior training for the BYA. So I'm just going to go straight to it. We are talking about sexual harassment and sexual assault on board. And the reason being is that A, we don't talk enough about it. B, it happens way too more than we want to admit. And C, there's a movement that has been created from Women Offshore and this platform called Women Offshore. And I think the name of the lady who is the founder is Alice or Alicia Saldaña. I don't quote me on it, but I believe that's their correct name. And she has come forward, and the last Sunday she asked for people from the maritime industry to, you know, start talking more about this topic so we can normalize the conversations around it and we can start shifting that paradigm of this is something that it's okay, even though it's not okay, to like, this is unacceptable and this must change. So with that being said, this is why I have Lynn with me today, because she has written articles about this topic. She has a lot of information that I would like for her to share with you guys today. And yeah, we're just going to go straight to it. So Lynn, I know there can be a little bit of different opinions on what constitutes sexual harassment and assault. Can you give us a definition of what is considered sexual harassment and assault in your perspective? Yeah.
Absolutely. So I first started writing about this back in 2015. And in that first article that I wrote for On Board Online, I actually defined what how sexual harassment is written. So I'm going to read that out so that it's very clear for everybody. And then we'll just dissect it a little bit as I did in the article. But if anybody wants to read the full article, just go into onboardonline.com. It's a website. It's an online platform for yacht crew. And you'll find my articles in there.
I'll put a link below the video so you guys...
That's great. Thanks, Marianne. So in the article, I said, firstly, let's examine how sexual harassment is defined. And sexual harassment is a form of sex discrimination. So the legal definition of sexual harassment is unwelcome verbal, visual, or physical conduct of a sexual nature that is severe or pervasive and affects working conditions or creates a hostile work environment. So I'm going to break that down so that everyone's very clear. And let's be clear about one other thing as well, Marianne, and I think it's important. Sexual harassment on board doesn't just happen to the girls, it happens to the boys as well. So the male crew can also be subjects of sexual harassment. And obviously the LGBTQ community can be subject of sexual harassment too. So we're not putting this in the female box at all.
Yeah, it's a human thing.
Yeah, exactly. This is for everybody. So first of all, I said it's the unwelcome. Unwelcome. First of all, if the conduct is not sexual, conduct is not sexual harassment, if it's welcome. So if you're a young, gorgeous stewardess, and sober or drunk, you come flying into the cruise mess in a very skimpy outfit and are very flirtatious and all of that sort of stuff, you're not setting your own personal boundaries very cleverly. You're much more prone to sexual harassment if you behave in a certain way, or if you dress in a certain way, or you're giving off certain energies, you could be opening yourself to sexual harassment. So you need to be aware of your own behavior. You have to take personal responsibility for this. Okay. So if the conduct is not sexual harassment, if it's welcome. So if you're behaving like that and you might get harassed in some way, then you might have been signaling that it's welcome. So for this reason, it's really important to communicate either verbally, in writing, or by your own actions to the harasser that that their conduct makes you feel uncomfortable. So if you're being harassed by somebody, make sure they know that this is not something that you find acceptable and that you want it to stop. In other words, you make a stand for yourself. And if you feel you're being sexually harassed, but by the same token, you be aware of your own behavior as well. Passing remarks or glances and so on that can be interpreted by others as signals of welcome attention. So just beware of that and set your own boundaries and be aware of your own behavior. So I said unwelcome verbal, visual or physical conduct. Conduct of a sexual nature, verbal or written conduct, such as suggestive comments about somebody's clothing, their personal behavior, or a person's body themselves, sexual and sex-based jokes, requesting sexual favors, or repeatedly asking a person out if they say no and you keep asking, you keep hassling them, sexual innuendos, spreading rumors about a person's personal or sexual life, threatening somebody. These are all behaviors which constitute harassment. Physical, if you assault somebody, you impede them or you block their movements, you try to stop somebody going out of the stair, you're waiting for them at the bottom of the staircase, whatever it might be. Inappropriate touching of a person or person's clothing, kissing, hugging, patting, stroking, pinching, all of those are physical misconducts. Nonverbal, looking up and down somebody's body, making derogatory gestures or facial expressions of a sexual nature, or if you follow somebody, all of those are unwelcome signs of sexual harassment. So visual, if you're sending inappropriate pictures of yourself naked, of drawings, of other pictures or emails of sexual nature, that's sexual harassment. And it's also interesting to note that non-sexual conduct may also be classed as sexual harassment. So if you are harassed because you're female rather than male, or because you're male rather than female, or if you're LGBTQ, who knows what you might be. For example, it'll be sexual harassment if you're the only female deckhand on board and certain tools, certain equipment can't be used by you because you're female. That would be not. It could be considered sexual harassment. So just be aware that if you're sidelining someone because of their sexual or their sexual orientation, that's sexual harassment. Severe or pervasive behavior. That's if somebody continues to hassle you when you've put up your boundaries and you've said no. So the conduct of the harasser must either be severe or it must be pervasive to be sexual harassment. If somebody makes a single remark, that's not sexual harassment. They might say, oh, you look gorgeous or something like that. That's not sexual harassment. That's an appreciation. So it has to be pervasive and ongoing. So if it affects your working conditions or creates a hostile work environment, that's also sexual harassment. So if you are fired, if you're refused a promotion, if you're demoted, given a poor performance evaluation, or reassigned to a less desirable position because you reject a sexual advance from head of department, from a captain, from an owner, from a management company, then that's sexual harassment. So these are all things that can affect your working conditions or create a hostile environment around you. Retaliation is also against the law. So not only is sexual harassment against the law, if you're experiencing that, but so is retaliation against someone for complaining about sexual harassment. So if you're being sexually harassed, you go to your management company and you say so, and then the captain is warned or whatever that this is happening on board, and he punishes you, that retaliation is also against the law. So examples of retaliation include the example where you complain about sexual harassment and then you lose your job, although the harasser continues to work, or your employer, owner or captain or management company retaliates against you for complaining about sexual harassment or for participating as a witness in an investigation, that's sexual harassment. So that, I think, Marion, makes it very clear about exactly what sexual harassment is.
So that's sexual harassment. And then when does all this become sexual assault?
I'm not clear about that, but I would say when physical force is used. I imagine that would then constitute assault, but I do not know the law about that, but that would be my interpretation. I would suggest that if you're involved in something that you feel is sexual assault, then look it up. But I would say the assault comes when you're physically abused in some way.
Okay, so for what I have read, I do understand that sexual harassment is part of sexual assault. Mm-hmm. And inside sexual assault, there is the category of rape, and there's other categories as well. So I just want to make sure that people understand, like, sexual assault and sexual harassment are not too far off, and one can bridge into the other. And rape doesn't equal sexual assault. Like, it is a part of it, is a category or a subcategory of it, but there's so much more within sexual assault. And I'll put the definition of that under the video here. But yeah, I think that at least we have a really good basic foundation of what this actually means in terms, right, in definition. Mm-hmm. So now I want to talk about the fact that many crew on board are super scared of reporting sexual harassment, sexual assault, even bullying, like all that sexism, whatever it is, racism, you know, because either nothing gets done because they have seen that nothing gets done, or that has been their own experience, or they are also afraid because they have been, threatened by the head of departments or captain or management. And if not threatened, also, I have heard this so many times, like, well, what do you want me to do? Like, I can't do anything. Look who's the owner, that kind of thing. Obviously, in this case, if we're talking about the owners or guests doing that. And then, so what can we do to start creating more safety around people being okay with reporting what's happening, right? Because I also feel like there's this in the yachting industry, the collective energy around this topic is nothing's gonna get done. Don't waste your time. Keep shot, keep moving on. And we need to change that. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, because the more it goes on, and there's nobody who's been in the industry for any amount of time that doesn't realize that sexual harassment, bullying, sexual assault maybe, does happen in our industry, as it happens in many industries. We're not unique in it. And so what can we do? We first of all, I would say to anybody that's undergoing sexual harassment and they feel like they've got nowhere to turn to, there are places you can turn, but if that's happening on a boat that you're working on and it's the captain or the owner or the owner's friends or whatever, don't lose sight that you have choices. You don't have to stay. Nobody's press ganged you to be on the yacht on which you're working. If that is happening to you, get off. I would say just get off. You're not going to change the owner. You're not going to change the captain. If those sort of people are behaving in that way, your safest bet is to get off, but please report it, because the more it goes unreported, the more that people get away with it. And it's easy, I know, to be afraid or in a fearful state of captains and other people that you feel are in charge or have more power over you or threaten you and say, I'll make sure you never get a job in the industry again, and all of this sort of thing. And is it true that if, say, for example, a chief engineer is sexually harassing the second stewardess and she reports it, that she's more likely to lose her job? I'm sorry. Unfortunately, yes. It's much easier to replace a stewardess than it is to replace a Y2 or 3 or 4 engineer. It's just one of those hard facts of the industry. It shouldn't be like that, but it is. So we do need to address it. I'm not saying that's 100% in every case. There may be captains that make a really good stand or management companies that make a really good stand. But if you're in the middle of a charter or middle of a season and somebody has to go, it's going to be the person that's more easily replaced. So what do you do about it? I would say you treat yourself and you treat your fellow members with respect. You cultivate a conscious awareness around other people's personalities and their reactions to certain situations. Know yourself, know your own reactions to situations. Take yourself away, if you possibly can, from people that are harassing you. So if there is a charter guest, for example, and you're doing cabins and they are harassing you in the cabins when you're there, report it to the head of department. Make sure you're never in a cabin on your own, or ask if you can be in the laundry room for the week that that charter's on. But do as much as you can to extricate yourself from the situation. Make your boundaries very clear. Report it to the captain. The captain is the one who has the authority to speak to the guests. He can terminate a charter if he thinks that crew are being sexually harassed in any way. He has a perfect right to ask the charter guest to leave or to terminate the charter. So you go through the proper channels. If you're not the head of department, go to the head of department, then go to the captain. If there's nothing happening, you can then go to your DPA, your designated person ashore. You should have that contact in your paperwork, either in your SEA, your Seaman's Employment Agreement, or in whatever documentation you have, the standing orders on board, or maybe it's up on the notice board in the cruise mess, but you should all have access to the phone number and the email address of your designated person ashore. Contact them. That's what they're there for. Contact your management company if you haven't got a DPA, but go through the right steps. I would also document any sexual harassment that you are experiencing, because should it escalate, then at least you have a documentation of what happened, when, what was said, what happened. And that I would keep it in a safe place, either write it down or email it to yourself or whatever it is that you feel comfortable with. So those are things you can do to safeguard yourself. And remember, people will only treat you the way that you allow them to treat you. So if you just keep putting up with it and just giggling and letting them touch you or behave inappropriately to you, it's just going to keep on going. So set your boundaries, make it very clear. And don't be another victim. If you are being harassed, you must report it, all right, and keep the evidence. Remember that if you eventually decide to go down a legal route, this can be a very long, very protracted experience for you, can be very costly. So it's much better to nip it in the bud before anything very serious happens. But there are, of course, lawyers ashore. There are unions such as Nautilus who can help you in legal situations. So Nautilus, maybe, Marion, you'll put the contact for Nautilus.
I do want to make sure that if you want the help from unions, you have to be part of their membership.
Yes.
Prior to this happening to you. So do get on their membership. So if something does happen, then they can actually do help you. Not
exactly
after it actually happens.
Exactly. So Nautilus is a good source. They, in fact, on the celebration of the International Day of the Seafarer in 2020, so last year, they launched their new Nautilus Fair Treatment app. So that's something that you can download, and that's something which provides members with instant access to union advice and support following an incident. So that's something very useful to have. You can also become a member of the PYA. I'm the Director of Interior Training for the PYA. It's a fabulous association, 100% committed to the service of seafarers in so many, many ways. Earlier this year, we set up a welfare group with some really excellent people in the industry who many of you listening to will have heard of. Karen Rayson, the crew coach, Sandra Jordan, a purser coach, the wonderful Dre Robinson, Chandra Robinson, who started the Start Yachting Facebook page, which gives all sorts of advice. Beck McKeever, who's one of the virtual pursers. So those people are very active in the welfare group of giving help and support. And we get together occasionally. We haven't done it yet this autumn, but I'm about to have a meeting with them. And I'll give you some results of some of the meetings we've had, Marion, so that you know what we've been talking about in recent times before I went away on the yacht this year. So apart from Nautilus, you also have the PYA, who offers legal advice to its members. Again, like Nautilus, you need to be a member. And they work very closely with ISWAN, International Seafarers Welfare Assistance Network. So they now operate a 24/7 helpline for the yachting community. So IceOne is a free service for yachting. You can dial an emergency number. They have an app as well. You can put that on your phone. And the PYA work very closely with them. There's also the MedAir Emotional Support Program, which provides quality care for any crew member and their immediate family, while also mitigating risks of operational disruption. So those are important numbers for you to have in your little repertoire. But of course, you are protected by law. So the ILO, the International Labour Organization's Maritime Labour Convention of 2006, became law in 2013. And that sets out the minimum working and living rights for all seafarers. So if you look at that, so the ILO, International Labour Organization's Maritime Labour Convention, MLC, 2006, that regards, it gives you all sorts of information, particularly in section 5, regarding codes of safe working practices for all seafarers.
Right. So if you want to make sure that people do understand that all these regulations, all these things that are in place it doesn't go across all the boats. You know what I mean? Like if you're on a small boat with an American flag, that regulation doesn't really apply to you. Like you have to learn also your flag state, what regulations are under your flag state, all this stuff, because it's not just black and white. It's very, yeah, very gray. So this is why, you know, inside the Yachts Mermaids, Mermaid Kickstart Bible, this is why I give you this information, because getting information on regulations, it's quite daunting. And it can get very complicated when you start reading. Everything's just kind of like iffy. So you really have to narrow it down to understanding your flag vessel, where you're from, what port are you in more than often, because all these will create a different outcome for you. Because not every vessel is commercial, not every vessel is under regulation of MLC. And all the above. So I want to make sure that just because you're a seafarer doesn't mean that all these regulations actually are backing you. Okay,
that's because right.
It does get real when something does happen and you start investigating about it. You're like, oh my god, like I'm not covered. This is why you have to prevent by investing in yourself and learning and educating yourself about the regulations, the seafarers. Rights and all this, because there are things out there for you, but you need to know where you stand among all of it, so you know what happens if something does happen, what's going to happen to you, and how much support are you actually going to get. So it is up to you, like Lynn said, you know, it's all about taking responsibility for yourself, and this includes learning and educating. And we can try to educate you by giving you all these little bits of info, but at some point you have to take the reins and actually go deeper into all these regulations, because believe me, there's a lot, and it gets a little bit weird when you start reading, but it's not impossible to actually learn about it, because I have actually learned about it a lot. So it's very important that, you know, this is not black and white. You need to do your research into what flag state you're in, where your port you're more likely to be at, because some boats are more always in the Med and they don't go to the States. Some boats are more in the States, like, or in other countries, like all this affects everything. Where you're from affects everything as well. Like, so I just want to make sure that people understand this, that they're not just covered because there's a IOL, MLC out there. Like, yeah, it's the reality. Yeah. It's not cool, but it is what it is. So just...
It is what it is, yeah. But one way you can always, and you will be protected in some way, shape or form, but the very best thing you can do for yourself, and I don't care what size boat it is, whether it's 25 meters or is that 150 meters, you have to have a seaman's employment agreement. In other words, you have to have a proper contract. So with a proper contract, then you can be protected. So it's very easy. And I know for greenies, so I don't like calling greenies, they're the future of our yacht crew. So for the new people to the industry, don't be bamboozled into thinking, oh, if I don't take this job, he says he's not going to give me a contract, but I really want it, and all of this sort of stuff. You must take responsibility for yourself. You must have a contract to protect you, so that if, for example, you're out in Turkey or something, and suddenly the owner's wife doesn't like the smell of you or the look of you or whatever it might be, and you get chucked off with your bags, you will be properly repatriated. You will get your proper holiday pay, all of that sort of stuff. It's a precarious industry. It's a wonderful industry in many ways, but there are times when you do, as Marion says, and it's so important, and I will always say it, you have to take personal responsibility. Yeah. So there's no one else to blame if you don't have a proper contract to work on a boat but yourself. I'm sorry to say that and sound a bit hard-nosed, but please, please, please do it. It's going to be worth your while.
So let's talk about, in your article, you said that some insurance companies protect owners if they were to sexually harass crew members. Like, I think, for me and a lot of people, this is unacceptable, and no one should have to, get out of jail card, right? Yeah. How can crew know that they're fully protected before joining a boat?
Yeah. Okay. Well, just to clarify, when I wrote an article in 2020 about this, I highlighted the incident on a yacht called Endless Summer. Now, quite a severe incident happened on this boat, where a young stewardess was brutally raped by a Polish deckhand. And to cut a long story short, it's all very traumatic, but she was awarded $70 million, that's $70 million, following that brutal rape by the American courts. But this incident will never leave her. So yes, it's very nice to have 70 million, but this is something that is all pervasive, this sort of incident, and it lives with you for the rest of your life.
I want to ask you something. Do you remember Endless Summer's flag state at the time?
I don't know, but you can read it, and do I have it in my article? You can read about it if you just Google Endless Summer rape case. You'll have all of the information there. This statement that you said at the beginning, Marion, just so that I can clarify it, is when I was writing about this incident, I said that this gentleman, the name is in my article, he was the vice president of a yacht insurance company in Fort Lauderdale. And what I read was this man, whose name I won't say, vice president of XYZ Yacht Insurance in Fort Lauderdale, believes that there would certainly be exclusions for owners engaging in such behavior, but when the crew are involved in sexual assault, there may not be coverage depending on the specific insurer and their policy language. Now, I've read this several times. It could be that I've misinterpreted it, but if I've interpreted the way that I read it, I am saying that it is absolutely not acceptable that any owners should have any sort of exclusion for engaging in this sort of behavior. Absolutely not. There's no way you're going to find that out, I'm sure, but I made it very clear that I was not at all for that sort of behavior at all. Rape is rape, whether it's perpetuated by the owner or a deckhand, it's still rape. So in this instance, obviously the yacht would have had to, or the yacht's owner would have, or his insurance policy would have had to pay out this $70 million, which was an enormous amount of money.
I guess what comes down to is that if you want to understand if you're fully protected before joining a boat, you have to ask the questions on the interview. What happens if I get sexually assaulted or harassed? What's the policy? What are the steps? What's the procedure? Because if they cannot tell you that, you should not be working for them.
Yeah. It's really tough, and it's very easy to say it, and I agree with the principle of it. It's really tough. I can see the sun is shining. Can you even see me still? It's really tough for the less experienced people just coming into the industry to ask those sort of questions. They're really tiptoeing around all sorts of things with wanting so much to get the job. When you're more in the industry and you're more, you know better about it, and it doesn't happen on every boat. Obviously, there are some boats which have beautiful, harmonious, high-functioning teams. They don't have to worry about it. But there are far too many which don't, and where people do get away with bad behavior, sexual harassment and bullying.
But to be honest, it's not just green crew. Like I conduct so many interviews in these 15 years, and senior members, head of departments, they literally don't ask questions. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, you're on an interview, like you need to ask questions. Like, how are you going to know if you're protected? How are you going to know if this happens? How are you going to know if this is actually in alignment with you and your boundaries, if you don't ask questions? Like, people don't understand that an interview is not a place where you're going to be asked and you have to, you know, answer. It's a place where two people come to have a conversation to ensure that this potential possibility, right, a job between the two of them, is correct for both parties. So it's a conversation. It's not something where you're going to go in and you're just going to answer whatever they ask you and then you're just going to go. And believe me, asking questions about itineraries is important, but it's not going to get you out of trouble if something happens to you. So asking these raw, real questions, you know, what happens if I die? What's the policy? This can happen. What happens if my hand gets cut off? What happens if somebody assaults me, whether it's owner, guest, or crew? What happens? Like, what are the procedures? What are the steps? How are you as a captain, right? Management, whoever you're talking to, is going to respond. How are you going to support me? Because if you don't ask these questions, more than likely, nobody's ever going to tell you about it.
No, exactly. So, and I agree with you. I'm just saying that for green crew, it's a very difficult question to ask because they probably don't know about it. Wouldn't even come into their way of thinking. Awareness. But for more senior crew, absolutely. But like everything, it's going to be the way that you ask it. So there will be a way of asking without being confrontational, in a very matter-of-fact way. So something like, what's included in my contract? Am I covered for any sort of injury or assault or that sort of thing? Death at sea, whatever.
And like I tell people, if you don't feel comfortable saying it, speaking about it on the first interview, when you send your thank you email for the opportunity of having that interview, just say, hey, by the way, I have these extra few questions. Can you please, you know, answer them to me on your, you know, whatever you want to say. And just ask there, like, hey, you know, like, what are the policies around this? Like, what would happen if this happens? Like, because you need to know. Like,
yes, you do.
Like, you don't want to know after the shit happens and then you're like, oh, fuck, I'm fucked. Literally.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like you really, and this is you taking responsibility of like understanding where you're going into and what could potentially happen and how are you potentially being supported. You know, just knowing like, you know, itineraries is not enough. It's just not enough because of the amount of assault and harassments that are happening, because these are the ones that we only know about, the ones that people are actually reporting.
Exactly.
Imagine all the ones that don't get reported, which is the majority. So take responsibility, ask the questions. You don't have to be confrontational, like Lynn said. I am very passionate. That's why I speak the way I do, but do ask questions, you know, and the people that don't want to answer, that's your red flag. You don't want to work for them. Move on.
Exactly.
Next.
Exactly. But just get comfortable with the question. And it's a very sensible one to ask. You know, you're out at sea.
I asked a captain and he said to me, you know what, Marianne, I never had this issue. I really don't know. Let me look it up and I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, well, this captain didn't know, which actually surprised me. But at the same time, I gave it to him that he actually said, I'm going to look it up and I'm going to educate myself and then I'm going to educate my crew.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't until somebody like me said, hey, what happens if this happens? He didn't even thought about educating himself about that situation. Because the fact that it hasn't happened doesn't mean it won't happen, right? So also, whoever captain's management is here with us today, please educate yourself and also start educating other people around these topics, because it's happening. We can't, like, not avoid it, you know, as we've been doing. How can we as an industry increase awareness of sexual harassment, assault, and help prevent it in a future?
Okay, so make the conversations easy to have. You know, it does happen. absolutely report it, report any sort of sexual harassment. That has to happen. You have to take responsibility for that, because that's going to protect somebody else in the future. So if you report it to a DPA, you report it to a management company, if that same person is reported about, you know, to once again, hopefully that's already a very red flag that's coming up and something can be done about it. But if they've never heard about, oh, this person never had this problem with this person before, but actually he's done it to 10 previous stewardesses, which could easily be the case, then, you know, he's getting away with it, or she's getting away with it, whoever it might be, whoever the harasser might be. We did talk about what we can do as an industry in the welfare group. So the few of the suggestions from the group were we could perhaps create a group petition to send to flag states with regards to proper emphasis being given to crew welfare. We could ask captains to sign a pledge to sustain a vessel free from sexual harassment and bullying. We could create a safe reporting procedure. This, I think, is paramount. So maybe a PYA or a welfare group could check that these are meeting all the requirements. So safe reporting procedures. Sometimes people are scared to report because they think they're going to lose their jobs because of it. Create welfare packages for crew, for example, suggesting a 5-page document with information such as the correct definition of harassment, like I've just done at the beginning of the call, what to do and where to turn. In the event of harassment and bullying. And that could be pinned up on everybody's notice board so that they have that information, so that people do know, first of all, they're not alone. And secondly, there are places to turn, because if you don't know those things, then this fear comes up. But that fear is not valid, because there are places you can go to. So you don't need to worry about that. You just need to know how to do it. We also said we could create quarterly workshops for captains, heads of departments and junior crew, just to bring the awareness to everybody, conduct yearly surveys and awards even to renew safe yacht. We could give safe yacht status to those who pass the survey, that sort of criteria. These are things we're thinking about initiating for the future.
Beautiful.
So first of all, there has to be an onboard complaint system and procedure on every yacht. There may be some on some, but not on every yacht. So how things are reported and to whom, so there's a proper line. So does it differ from the head of department and the DP? Does it differ from the head of department and the DPA? So in the way in which you report something to a DPA, is it different from the way you report it to the head of department? Or is it the same? Or does one go to another? That has to be clearly defined. We need to know how to identify and weed out repeat offenders. In other words, you've got to start reporting it. Otherwise, how does anyone know that they're repeat offenders? Because they're breaking their own codes of conduct. How can we let the MCA know, for example? How can we let the MCA know and how can we hold, with their help, people accountable for their actions? I mean, if we're getting people in higher places, the heads of department and the captains who are serial offenders, how can the MCA help us weed them out? Because they're contravening their codes of conduct. So what clauses pertaining to welfare can be enforced through people's contracts of employment, their SEAs? What can be done to ensure due process is followed, a complaint procedure? And what resources can we provide? So all of these questions need to be put to yachts. Maybe we can create some sort of survey. Then we can get answers into how we can properly implement systems which will protect crew in the future.
Beautiful. And I think, you know, two things that came up when you were talking. Reporting obviously is key, speaking up about it, right? But also when people do report, because I actually had this experience where a crew agency contacted me telling me that they have gotten reports from other people about a captain that has access to their database of crew, and, you know, women that have gone to the interview have reported sexual harassment. And they saw a show I did here in Uncensored, and they realized that it could be potentially the same perpetrator. So they got in contact with me and all that. And I was shocked. I was shocked, first of all, because this was a woman talking to another woman. And for me, that was like absolutely, absolutely unacceptable. And the fact that they said, you know, we have all this, but because we realized that the person that I did the interview, it wasn't the person that the captain that they were talking about. They said, well, we're not going to do anything about it. I'm like, you already have people that came to you after each interview telling you this happened to me. Like, when do crew agencies, management, and all these other people that are not crew take also responsibility and actually step up and do their job, which is also to keep seafarers safe? Because if you're giving access to your database of thousands and thousands of crew members to a perpetrator, you're basically putting in danger lives of other people. So for me, that's like, how many do you need for you to say, this person needs to be stopped? You know what I mean? Like, does this person needs to go into the length of rape for the person to say, actually, we as a company, we're going to decide that this person needs to be removed from our database? I'm like, I was like, by the way, seafarers are your money. Because without seafarers, you don't make money as a crew agent. You don't have seafarers, you don't make money, period. So I was just like stunned. I was shocked by this situation. I don't know. Like, for me, it was like, wow. Like, you know, it's not just seafarers who need to report and do the job of making this, you know, better. And it's also the crew agencies, management companies, shipyards, like any maritime industry within this yachting industry needs to step up and needs to take responsibility for their own part of people that they know. And I know there's a lot of perpetrators within these big companies, because we know that, which gets a little bit tricky because, okay, well, you know, the ones calling the shots is the one that's doing the bad things. But if you are not in that scenario, like a crew agent, like, if you already had four or five people tell you the same thing, why wouldn't you stop that captain from getting crew from you? And why wouldn't you call him out and call all your other crew agency people and say, hey, this person needs to be blacklisted? Because I know, as I worked as a crew agent back in the day, and I know we had a blacklist for boats, and I know we had a blacklist for crew members. Why are we not doing that? Right? So, yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I suppose, you know, the easy answer to your question, which was, you know, a rhetorical question, why are they doing it, is because they're making a lot of money out of it. So most of the crew agents, I hope, are pretty scrupulous in what they do. However, even sometimes ones with good reputations might fall by the wayside with the promise of making lots of money out of certain positions. So this is where crew, whether they're new crew or whether they've been in the industry for a while, you have to take some responsibility for this. If you're being offered a job as a second or third stewardess and you're getting offered 6,000 euros a month, already you should be going, well, that's very nice, but what's the catch? Because there is one. If you're being asked to sign an NDA at interview stage, you have to be asking yourself the same question. That is not a normal thing to do. That's where you should say, thank you very much, but no thank you, and never look at that job again. And I'm talking real life situations here. So be very wary. I like to think that most of the crew agents, and I think they are have the crew welfare at heart. But there are some which don't. There are some which are seduced by big commissions and all seduced even by pleasing owners, because that's good for their business as well. So if you as a crew member come across a job which seems too good to be true, do some investigation for yourself before it gets to before you go too far down the line with it. There will be warning signs. You'll feel it.
For me, what was really shocking was that because of social media now being huge in job, looking for jobs, right? And now crew agencies have become like, you know, they have exploded, right? There's like so many out there. But back in the day when I started in 2006, 2005, there was like, I could count them with my hand, you know, there were many and there were big names and everybody knew them and it was like respectful and all this, even though now I'm realizing that it's kind of like, not really, but, you know, when the social media boom came in and now you don't know who's behind the computer. It could be a perpetrator. They could be lying to you, right? I've done shows about this where girls have been attacked by fake crew agents and fake captains and all this. You kind of think, well, if I'm going through a crew agent, big names, I'm talking big names. I'm not talking little names. Like the crew agency that contacted me is a big, big crew agent out there. Management company, you know, they're also a management company out of this. You think I'll be safer because they have a big name, you know, like they're taking care of me. They wouldn't put me in a place where there's going to be a perpetrator, or at least that they know consciously, right? That this person's going to do what they're going to do, because obviously it could happen that they don't know. And then it happens and then you report it, but then you would think they would do something about it. And for me, you know, having them contacted me and saying like, we know this is happening, but we're not willing to do anything. I was like, wow, where are we now? Mm. I can't even like now trust that whatever you're doing in your job is actually for the wealth, you know, for to continue to keep crew safe, because you just made me realize that just because you have a big name doesn't mean you're actually, you know, in it for the right things. So it just kind of made me think of like, wow, now we're in this place where we don't even know who to trust. And that's quite sad, you know, because this is a very small industry, is the reality. It's not a big industry, quite niche, quite small. And I would think that everybody would, you know, people with the right mindset would like to help each other and be there for each other and support and make the industry better, because this industry is expanding and it's not going anywhere. It's like becoming bigger, bigger, bigger boats, bigger this. And the bigger it becomes, the more regulations need to become in place. Because back in the day, a big yacht was what, an 80 footer? Now that's like the baby yacht of the normal yacht. You know, like this industry has changed a lot, but a lot of things haven't changed. And yeah, it just kind of like, it was a shocking moment for me to realize the reality that we're facing, that I didn't even realize where we were. You know, I still had my faith in reputation companies, you know, in companies that have a good reputation. But then you realize, well, I mean, they're not, you know, doing their job properly.
Well, some, so that we don't scaremonger, there are, I hope there's the majority that are working, you know, people like YPI, Blue Water Yachting, Key Crew. These are companies that I know are very focused on crew welfare and very honest crew agents. I know that. Some we know are not so much so. And so, you know, it's up to people to do their homework as well. But mostly, you will know yourself if a job spec comes up and it feels odd to you. There's something, if your inner self is saying there's something that's not quite right about this.
Yeah.
Then you really must take notice of that, because that's something inside you telling you that it's not right, and it probably is not going to be right, and it's certainly not going to be right for you as an individual.
And to wrap things up, do you think the situation around this topic has improved in the industry over the past few years because of the whole Me Too movement, or do you feel like that hasn't really kind of like crossed over into the yachting industry?
Yeah, it's crossed over.
Like the same people, right? The people that rent the boats, own the boats. It's
yeah. There's certainly. I don't think it's got any better from in 1982 when I tell you what's happened in 1982 when I first joined yachting. It probably didn't happen as much, or we had a different perspective about it. So maybe people are more sensitive now to what sexual harassment is. Back in the old day, we'd say, oh, dirty old man or something, he's always trying to pinch my bottom or whatever it might be, or he's trying to give me a kiss. And we'd kind of brush it off a bit more. Nowadays, it's a different industry. It's a very different industry. I know I'm a baby boomer. Now we're talking about XYZ generations, because even I can't remember the name of the generation that's just kind of moving through now. But we're getting new generations of people who process things in a very different way. And the industry, as you said, has grown enormously, particularly over the last 20 years. So whereas you might have been working on a boat with of 30 meters, where you have a small number of crew, more family, like now you've got boats which are 130 odd meters. And there you've got a corporation of people, 50, 60 crew on there. And so the dynamic changes enormously. There are, of course, so many different flag states, different rules and regulations. When you're offshore, what can you do about XYZ happening? What's happening when prostitutes are being helicoptered in and all of this sort of stuff? All the stuff that happens in our industry, that we'll all find out about if you don't know about it already. It's an unusual industry, and it doesn't seem to fall under the same legal system, if you like, as land-based industries. So maybe we are less protected. So that's where we have to step up now. As individuals, you have to make sure you have watertight contracts so that you are safeguarded. As Marion said, ask the right questions in the interview, but don't over-dramatize it so they think, oh, she's going to be a troublemaker or he's going to be a troublemaker. But ask the questions in a matter-of-fact way so that you know you're properly covered. If a captain says, oh, you know, we don't worry about any of that, maybe they should worry about it. It's a good time for them to start worrying about it. So, take personal responsibility, I think, is the number one thing. Go to reputable crew agents and do your homework about the crew situation that you're getting into. So if you're going for an interview on a boat and it's for a stewardess, and you say, why did the last stewardess leave? She had a problem at home or whatever it might be. Do some investigation. You might find that that boat's gone through 15 stewardesses in the last couple of seasons, and it's all for the same reason. They're being harassed by the owner or the captain, exactly, or whoever, and it might be. So do some homework.
It's such a small industry, believe me. Yeah. People will know people. Like Facebook, I mean, yeah, you know a friend of a friend of a friend, you just ask. Or go into the Facebook group, hey, anybody know about this boat? Anybody know about this? Yeah. People will contact you, DM you in private if they
have will.
Hey, yeah. And don't be afraid of asking questions and knowing, you know, and making yourself safe, because at the end of the day, you are also responsibility for your safety. And yeah, we are more vulnerable in the maritime industry because laws don't transfer the same way from land to sea. And there's a reason behind that, right? So yeah. Hopefully that does change in a future. But while that's in place, we need to take responsibility and do our own homework, educate ourselves, ask questions. And if something doesn't feel right, for sure. And more, I want to finish this conversation by, you know, the reason why we're having this conversation is to ignite more people to talk about the topic, because the more you speak about it, the more we normalize the topic, and it doesn't become, it goes from taboo to something like, yeah, that happens, how can we make it better, move on. You know, exactly. Like we need to normalize it. Right now it's like, oh my God, sexual harassment, sexual taboo. Like, no, don't talk about it. It's like, why are we not talking about it? Like, it happens all the time. So,
And if it wasn't happening, you wouldn't be getting training in it in your SDCWs, and there wouldn't be so many welfare groups which are now set up, and there wouldn't be people who are there, you know, putting together groups that to support people who have either been through it on a welfare situation. Yeah. And so, you know, the flags are there, the support is needed, the incidents are happening. So get yourself trained, look at your SDCW training. You've got proper training there. We as a company, Luxury Hospitality, we offer training in sexual harassment and bullying and suicide prevention and all of that sort of thing. So get the training. If you're a head of department and you're watching this and you think your crew need that because they're experiencing this in some way, and you think that sort of training would be helpful to set your boundaries, to know how to cope with this sort of thing, how to support other people, you know, get in touch with Luxury Hospitality. There are courses out there to support you. There are unions out there and associations out there to support you.
You have to invest in yourself. You have to
absolutely, you
know, do that. So I'll put all the links that I find that will be helpful that we talked about here. So just click down below the video And Lynn, thank you once again. It's lovely having you again on the show. And yeah, thank you.
Thank you for bringing this important subject to the fore, because it's a difficult one to talk about. But the more we push it under the carpet, the worse it's going to get. So let's get open about it. Let's do the things that we can do to combat it. And as an industry, as a force together, we can make the industry better and safer for everyone.
Exactly. Absolutely. Well, that's a wrap, guys. If you have something to share, some wisdom to pass on, click on the link below and get on the Uncensored show. Until next time. Bye.